And now, the life of Mary Southern. The full significance of events, actions, words can seldom be realized at the moment. Time is needed to determine whether or not they will leave an indelible impression, whether their effect will be lasting or fleeting. When a few minutes ago, John Benson's car stopped in front of the boarding house, David, not wishing to see him, left Mary downstairs and went to his room. Now, he stands by the window, weighing the words spoken this morning by his lifelong friend, Father Brady. The words which prompted his talk with Mary. The words which have brought him to a realization of what he has permitted his life to become. He stands by the window, pondering, debating, judging, weighing. And as he seeks the answer to the problem which has become uppermost in his mind, he sees himself again in Father Brady's office. And again he hears the gently accusing words of the priest, his friend.
One of the saddest sights in the world to me, David, is to see a man with great possibilities. A man who used to have dreams, ambitions, hopes, and high aspirations, spend his life in aimless, pointless wanderings. To drift when he might succeed. To live without reason, without direction. To throw away those dreams and aspirations he once held. And become a person who meanders through life. A man with ability who's proven his worth on the fire. And yet who, when adversity first came to him, gave up. To spend his life in vague, formless regret. It's not a happy picture, David. It's not a happy picture.
Forced by the facts, by circumstances, to agree with part of what Father Brady told him, David, unwilling as yet to agree wholeheartedly, seeks an excuse with which to justify the years he has lived in Craig's Falls doing nothing, the years he has drifted, the years he has thrown away. He remembers what his friend said of adversity, of his giving up too easily. David leaves the window. As he comes into the room, he takes his key ring from his pocket. He walks toward the cabinet in a corner of the room, half hidden by the chair before it. Slowly, as though drawn by an irresistible force, he opens the cabinet door and mechanically pulls out the second drawer. It seems this is a familiar routine to David. So he takes the papers off the top, looking for what he knows he will find beneath them. His fingers close on the object of his search. He gazes at it. A bitter smile on his face. A sardonic smile. Half of regret, half of scorn and disdain. But now, the object in his hand seems to recall something poignant. Something almost fearful. For David's expression changes.
So I started drifting. I gave up. What does he know about it? What does anyone know? Any man will do the same thing. And if a woman really loved him, what difference would it make? What earthly difference would it make if she really loves him and he loves her? Well?
David.
Yes, what do you want, Miss McPherson?
Will you be here for lunch?
Lunch? A lunch? Well, what difference does it make?
Just makes it easier to plan.
I see. Well, come on in. We'll talk it over.
No, no, David. I've
got
nothing to
do. Come on. Come on.
No.
You haven't anything to do. And don't stand there and tell me that you won't even pass the time of day talking to your star boarder, my dear Mrs. Mack.
Just tell me whether you'll be here, David.
No, I refuse to commit myself. You know something?
What?
In all the years I've lived here, I never before realized what a systematic, methodical person you were. That's a great virtue.
Oh, no,
that's right. Everything you do is done on schedule. Like asking me about lunch. It's done for a reason, a purpose. You're heading somewhere, and you know how you're going to get there, step by step, don't you?
I think you're joking,
David. No, not at all. Not at all. I've never been more serious in my life.
Well, I'd like to know that brought all this on. You're such a moody person, David. I never know how to take
it. I haven't got it on.
You asked me a question. I merely started discussing the principles involved.
If it's still you haven't answered the question.
What was it?
Oh, David Drake, I declare it sounds just impossible. You've a memory like one of the sieves in the kitchen.
Well, Miss McPherson,
I asked you if you were going to be here for luncheon.
Why the census today? You don't usually ask.
Well, you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but there are going to be three extra today that I know of, and if you don't tell me, maybe you'll get left out.
Who are the three extras?
Well, Dr. Benson's one. He's downstairs with Mary right now. There's two other guests coming, but I don't know their names.
I see. Well, I've got some things due downtown, so you can count me out.
Well, why didn't you say so in the first place?
Oh, no special reason. Must one have a reason for everything?
Well, of course, David.
Why?
Oh, don't stand there asking me all these questions. I told you,
well,
I got a lot
of questions. Who else can I get to answer them for?
Oh, you're so silly, though, David. Making mountains out of molehills and being so serious about my being methodical and having a purpose and all that.
But I am serious. Really, I am.
I didn't know, David. You know, it's hard to tell with you.
I know. But it's... Well, it's getting close to my fifth anniversary as your star boarder. And I've just been thinking over the years that I've been here. I'm sort of a sentimental fellow, you know. Anniversaries mean quite a bit to me.
Of course, David.
I was just wondering, well, how does it seem to you to have a fairly young man in the house who does nothing, who spends his time, shall I say, loafing, sort of drifting through life? How does it seem, Mrs. Mack? Come on. You and I have always been good friends. Tell me.
David, to tell you the truth, I never thought very much about it.
Haven't you thought anything about it? About what I do? Or rather, what I don't do?
No, why should I? You told me you have a small income of your own, so why should I worry about what you do with your life?
Oh, probably no reason why you should. Sometimes, you know, we all wonder what other people think of us. Tell me this. Would any woman think more of a man who had a purpose in life than one who didn't?
David, who can tell? What's right for some isn't right for others. Why should I sit in judgment on my friend?
Well, I'm asking you to. In my case...
You or anybody else, David, it's all the same. What people do with themselves is their and their lives is their own business, and nobody else's.
And you won't tell me?
No. But I will say this, David.
Yeah?
I started thinking about something that, well, that I never thought had even occurred to you. Just keep going along the same track you're on. Maybe something will come of it. You never can tell.
Yes, I see what you mean. Well, thanks. Yes, I'd better be running along. It's pretty near lunchtime now. I suppose I'll have to say hello to John Benson on the way out.
Oh, David, I'm glad you're here. We were afraid you'd gone out.
I'm just going now, Mary. Good morning, Dr. Benson.
Good morning, Mr. Drake.
It's nice to meet you.
Nice to see you, sir.
You haven't seen our patient yet, I take it?
No, I came here first.
Of course.
John wants to talk with the factory doctor before seeing Sam, David, and we can't talk to him until after lunch.
Yes, that's the sensible thing to do, of course. Work slowly, step by step. Hey, Doctor?
Yeah, I find that's the best procedure generally, Mr. Drake.
You know, Mary and I almost didn't call you.
Oh, really?
Yes, David was afraid it might be an imposition, John, to make you come all the way from Sanders for a girl... Well, a girl like Fran Garfield.
But she's your friend, Mary. Mr. Drake must have overlooked that.
Well,
you see, Mr. Drake, you have overlooked something. I'm quite sure of it. Mary knows that nothing she ever asked me to do would be an imposition. What's equally as important, she knows that she can depend upon me whenever she needs me. Don't ever worry about either of those two things, will you? It would be a very bad error in judgment on your part if you did.
You
John Denton has apparently accepted the disappointment he must have felt when Mary told him she called him only to see Fran Garfield. And David Drake, confused and perplexed, seeks the answer to his problem, not within himself, but by asking the advice of others.